I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, could lawsuits be filed against activists who blocked a Seattle freeway? Attorney Ted Frank joins us.
Citizens have the right to sue for nominal damages, just a token amount of damages, actual damages from any delays caused by this.
Plus, Governor Jay Inslee delivers his final State of the State address.
The state of our state is stronger than ever.
And the unbelievable book deemed appropriate for local fourth graders.
When you were born, they looked at you and made a guess.
That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month during this critical election year by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A ton to get to on the show today, but are we going to do breaking sports news on a political podcast? I feel like we must.
I feel like we have to.
Pete Carroll out as the Seahawks head coach. I have some choice words for him, but first it was broken by Adam Schefter, which even I know that is the guy for sports breaking news. So when you see something from him, it's true. He says, a shocker in Seattle. Pete Carroll is expected to be out as the Seahawks head coach, per sources. He could still remain in the organization, but not as the head coach. And then the Seahawks confirming that in a tweet. Said statement from Jody Allen, chair of the Seattle Seahawks. After thoughtful meetings and careful consideration for the best interest of the franchise, we have amicably agreed with Pete Carroll that his role will evolve from head coach to remain with an organization as an advisor. Pete is the winningest coach in Seahawks history, brought the city its first Super Bowl title, and created a tremendous impact over the past 14 years on the field and in the community. His expertise in leadership and building a championship culture will continue as an integral part of our organization moving forward. Pete will always be a beloved member of the Seahawks family. Okay, fine. I mean, it's big news, whatever it is. I'll never forgive Pete Carroll, though. He's dead to me. Not it physically. I stopped caring about the Seahawks after they treated Dory like crap.
I'm with you.
Bottom line. I didn't care if they won anymore. If somebody had free tickets to a game for me, yeah, I'll go. I'll have some beer. I'll eat some food. But I could not have cared any less if they won or lost.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm really excited about this because I kind of missed them the last couple of years. And this brings me back to the Seahawks, I think.
Yeah.
I was over him.
Yeah, 100%. And look, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I know after Dory died, he was at a press conference and he said something about it.
But
I will not forget that Pete Carroll could have saved Dory's pre- and post-game job with the Seahawks.
Could have stood up for him. Could have said anything.
Didn't stand up for him because of wokeism. Mm-hmm. And that's a shame because he knew what kind of guy Dory was. Dory was an excellent human being. He knew that. Dory loved doing the pre- and post-game. But because of wokeism.
Considered him a friend.
Yep. Pete Carroll absolutely drank the Kool-Aid and threw Dory right under the bus. And so long, Pete Carroll, not concerned. And I hope that his continued role with the organization isn't to continue to politicize football, because I really would like to get back to cheering for the team. Curious to hear your thoughts, though.
See how he made that
in comments
show
today.
Worthy?
Yeah, it fits in the theme of the show. Screw
like
you,
that.
Man. Undivided, Brandi. Undivided.
Undivided. Undivided.
Undivided. Undivided, but also screw you. Okay.
Well, that was fun. Right. I like that we
I would
got
say
to
that,
involve sports a little.
I would say the sports are behind us, but we actually have a divisive sports-related story coming up in national news today we'll get to. All right, some other good news. Governor Inslee has delivered his final State of the State address. Man, I've covered all of them. This is his 12th and final year as governor. So if you want something to look forward to, you never have to listen to another one of those again. I was getting some text messages from lawmakers in Olympia about his speech as it was going on. And one of them was saying, you know, this is my 10th. And I told him that qualifies you for sainthood to have to sit through that many of the governor's State of the State addresses. As I said, I've covered them all as a political reporter. But, you know, you always, whether it's the State of the Nation, is that what you call it? State of the Nation.
Yeah.
Yeah. State of the Nation. State of the State. You're always like, you come up with a word or a phrase that the state of the state is blank. State of the nation is blank, right?
State of the city.
State of the city is blank. And it's always completely, very rarely do politicians assign an accurate word to describe what the state of whatever the level of government is. And in his final State of the State address, Governor Inslee is no exception.
I am happy to report that we have been, we are, and we will always be the strongest state in the nation. In fact, the state of our state is stronger than ever.
Well, that's not good. But also, by what metric? By what metric is the state of our state stronger than ever? Since you came into office, Governor Inslee, homelessness is up, substance abuse is up, overdose deaths are up, our mental health crisis and system are absolutely in shambles, taxes are up, you promised not to raise taxes when you entered office, how'd that go? Not well. Gas prices are up, the strain on working class people, traffic, affordability, you name it. All worse than when he took office. So I'm sure he wants to protect whatever legacy he thinks he has, but to stand up there and say the state of our state is stronger than ever is absolutely an Inslee fantasy. So let's go through some of the things the governor talked about in his address. Shocking, I know, he focused a lot on climate change.
There are neighborhoods today in our state where people are dying 2.5 years younger on average because of pollution.
How are you calculating that? I've been thinking about this ever since he said that. How could you realistically and accurately estimate that? Where do you have neighborhoods where people have been living long enough for the neighborhood they're living in to have any sort of impact on their health because of the climate of that neighborhood? What neighborhoods are those? That, I would say, is a lie, because I just can't think of any reliable data that you could use to determine if people are living 2.5 years less. Makes no sense. Also talked about the Climate Commitment Act, which he's desperate to save. I mean, if he goes out of office and the CCA is repealed by voters, it'll just be a knife in the back or in the heart to Governor Inslee. And he's bragging about all this money that they're bringing in, more money than they ever, ever imagined, so much so they don't even know how to spend it. And he thinks it's a gift that he's redistributing some of that money back into the community.
I think it's important to note, this is money going right back to Washington families. It's not going off to Houston or other oil hubs with the oil industry's record $200 billion in profits in 2022. And now we have more that we can give back to our communities. I'm proposing a $200 utility bill credit for one out of every three households in Washington. That's nearly 2 million low and moderate income Washingtonians.
$200 credit, which is just your money that you've been taxed to, you know what, at the gas pump. He's turning around, giving it back to some people and acting like it's some charitable, like he's just the best person in the world. Meanwhile, you'll remember that when Puget Sound Energy said, hey, we have to raise rates across the board for people because of the Climate Commitment Act and the carbon tax, and the Attorney General's office advised the State Utilities and Transportation Commission, yeah, just don't let people know that's why rates are going up. And now Inslee wants to say, hey, and I guarantee you that when Inslee sends that $200 credit to low-income Washingtonians, he'll say it's because of the Climate Commitment Act. He'll say, but when rates went up because of the Climate Commitment Act, oh, no, we're not going to, we can't say that. No, not at all. But rates go down. That's my Climate Commitment Act and what's happening.
Oh, it does.
Oh, 100%.
That happened already this month. And it says due to the climate commitment,
yeah,
whatever.
They gave
says.
Some lower, carbon like tax. People who met a certain income threshold, like a credit on their accounts, and saying but it's because they already paid so much before and they're getting a credit.
Yep. Carbon credit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely ridiculous. All right. Let's see. He also talked about the COVID era, which is not a surprise. I mean, that accounted for an awful lot of his final few years in office. And he says that his actions saved thousands of lives.
This state saved thousands and thousands of lives when COVID struck.
I mean, I also don't know how you calculate that. I have no idea how you calculate that. You could look at other states and what happens there, but you don't know. How can you say that a mandate that the government put down prevented this many people from getting sick, or mask mandates, or a vaccine that didn't prevent people from getting sick? How can you say with any degree of certitude how many lives your mandates might have saved? I would also say the governor continues to ignore and has ignored every step of the way the hurt that his mandates had on people economically, on their ability to connect with family members and elderly loved ones who were in the final stages of their life. So that's not a surprise. The governor managed to also live on a completely different planet when it comes to homelessness.
Some think we can just wave a wand and those living in homelessness will simply disappear. But this is the real world, and we have an honest solution. Build more housing, connect people to the right services, and they'll have a chance to succeed.
So, do I even need to comment on that? I'm not even sure that I need to. Affordable housing is part of the solution. It's not the full solution. I am very, very glad that the governor is not going to be in office to continue to push what is a total falsehood. But for him to say, people think that there's it's another one of his straw man arguments, right? People think there's a magic wand that you can just wave out there and fix home. Who has said that there's a magic wand? Who has said that? And homelessness is by far worse than it was when you took office. By far. No one's saying it's a magic wand, but we are pointing to specific policies that you have put in place that have made the homeless crisis worse. A hands-off approach to drugs, the fact that under your watch, the state's largest psychiatric hospital lost its federal accreditation. All of those things have contributed to the crisis on our streets. Is a lack of affordable housing a small piece of that pie? Yes. But I have contended, and I will continue to contend, that you could put these people in million-dollar mansions, and they will end up right back on the streets, or they will die of overdoses in the house that you gave them. And of course, while he's talking about how we don't have a magic wand, you know what is the magic wand for fixing homelessness, according to the governor? More of your money.
Washingtonians can see that dozens of encampments along our highways are no longer there. And we need to know that that will continue only if we make additional necessary investments. And they're going to see thousands more new housing units thanks to your work as well. I want to thank this legislature for going big on housing last session.
Okay. Yeah, you're not taking people off the sides of interstates and putting them directly into housing. That's just not how it works. I would also point out that does not mean We've discussed the $143 million that the governor's office spent in trying to clear some of those encampments along highways. Now, I'm not going to argue with his assertion there that they have been cleared. If you look at some of the stretches, like from here down to Olympia, for instance, there are some encampments that the state went in and cleared, and in the place they put boulders so people couldn't come back and put tents. I'm in support of that. What I'm not in support of is spending $1 million per person to get them out of those encampments and out of homelessness. So you can ask for more money until the cows come home, but unless you're spending that money to its best effect, that's still a failure. All right, he talked about, don't even be starting this one, the need for more law enforcement.
Washington State also needs more police officers, and that's what this budget, I hope, will do. My budget funds more state troopers and forensic scientists and organized retail theft task force, thanks to the idea from our attorney general, and more funding for drug trafficking investigations.
Love more funding for drug trafficking investigations. I think that's really important. However, the governor over the past 12 years should have been speaking out about what's happening at the southern border if he really cared about stopping the drug traffickers who are moving a bunch of narcotics up through California, through Oregon to Washington State and killing people on our streets. So there is a disconnect between what he says he's in support of and what he's willing to talk about and condemn publicly. The governor, a former presidential candidate, albeit very short-lived, speaking out about what's happening at the southern border would make a difference, but he has so far refused to. As far as more funding for police, great, I'm glad. More funding for police, more funding for additional state troopers, but just because you have the funding there doesn't mean you have the people who want the jobs. And that's because of a political climate. If you are wanting to be a police officer in this country, Washington is just not the place a lot of people are going to do that. We have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. You're not going to turn that around overnight. Seattle police have lost 700 officers. A lot of that is because of because of politicians who have refused to stand up for them, who have vilified them. So that climate can't be fixed overnight. So sure, put some funding aside for maybe if we've got a good governor who, after Inslee, who's supportive of law enforcement, maybe you can slowly start to turn that around. But the loss in the number of officers and sheriff's deputies and state patrolmen, I'd also point out the governor fired state troopers over the vaccine mandate. So it's sort of hard for me to take him seriously when he says he supports them and he wants to hire more of them. But, you know, I hope the situation can be turned around with a governor who's actually invited to the funerals of fallen officers. But I mean, if it's Bob Ferguson who's the next governor, there's going to be no change there. If anything, that's someone who's politically prosecuted police officers, used his power to do that. So that's going to make the situation worse. Fund it all you want. What is that saying? If you build it, they will come. If you fund it, they might not come. I hate to put it that way. All right. Governor Inslee talked about social justice and equity under his watch.
I'm proud the leaders of our state are under no illusion that social justice issues were somehow settled 60 years ago with the passage of the Civil Rights Act. We will continue advancing social justice, and we have made equity a part of everything we do in state government.
That's the problem, because you've been so focused on equity that you haven't been focused on solutions to things that are killing people on our streets. I promise just one more. Just one more. It's his last one, you guys. We'll never have to do this again. He says, our democracy and abortion are in grave danger.
Before I close, I want to say that there are two grave threats in the United States and, unfortunately, in our state today. One threat is to the very basic tenets and blessings of democracy. The other is the ongoing assault on a woman's right of choice. We need to enshrine reproductive freedom in our Constitution and pass a constitutional amendment protecting the right of choice this year.
Look, I've actually heard from some Republicans who don't hate the idea of that, who are supportive of what voters did. But let me be clear, because this is going to come up. The only reason Democrats want to do that, to pass and codify protections in the state constitution, is because they want to force Republicans to vote on that. And that's a tactic in an election year. It's similar when Reagan Dunn was running for Congress. He's a King County councilman. When he was running for Congress in a swing district, the King County Council brought up this resolution about abortion rights because it went all the way down the food chain from the Democratic Party all the way down to have Democrats on the King County Council bring this forth and force a vote so they could get Reagan Dunn on the record, who was voting against it because it didn't mean anything. It was meaningless. And then they used that against him when he was running for Congress. So while I don't really inherently have an issue with codifying abortion rights as the voters have set them in the state of Washington, I do very much so question their motivations for doing it this year. All right, that has been my wrap-up of Governor Inslee's final state of the state address. Okay, we talked about this on the show yesterday, and we've been talking all week about what happened over the weekend with the blockade of Interstate 5 in Seattle for hours on end over the weekend by pro-Palestine activists. Police didn't do anything. Politicians didn't say anything because they don't have a backbone. So what are we supposed to do as citizens when we are just left at the whim of these activists? No condemnation. I mean, you look at Chaz Chopp, right? And the climate that businesses and residents in that area were forced to live with for a month in the summer of 2020. They couldn't do anything about it. Politicians were actively supporting it, the summer of love. So yesterday on the show, we were talking about this attorney. His name is Ted Frank. He's the director of litigation. He's a senior attorney, director of litigation at Hamilton Lincoln Law Institute. And he was on social media in light of what happened in Seattle, but also elsewhere in the country because he's DC based. And he was saying, look, I think that it is time for private citizens to take matters into their own hands by filing lawsuits against the individual activists who are interfering in their lives. Ted Frank was nice enough to join us on the podcast to discuss what kind of cases these would be. Ted Frank, welcome to Undivided.
Thanks for having me.
You're my just favorite person of the week.
I'm glad to have met that qualification.
It's a high threshold. So we obviously had this blockade of the interstate in Seattle. This is not a new tactic in Seattle or really elsewhere in the country. We've seen it repeated over and over, whether it's a street, a bridge, a highway. It's your contention that citizens might be able to sue over this interruption in their lives. How so?
Well, for hundreds of years, there's the common law tort of false imprisonment. If I lock you in a room and won't let you out, it's an intentional tort, and you can sue me for that. And I think it's no different when you're blocking a highway and trapping people in their cars so that they can't get off the highway and that they're burdened accordingly. And it helps that it's illegal to block the highway like that. And citizens have the right to sue for nominal damages, just a token amount of damages, actual damages from any delays caused by this, and then punitive damages. And that can be a class action when it affects thousands of people who are suing over the identical issue, whether the people and, or more importantly, the organizations that would be sued acted illegally and wrongfully to the citizens hurt by these traffic jams caused by these illegal protests.
Now, would it have to be, you mentioned organizations there, would it have to be directed at, let's say, the Democratic Socialists of America, who've conducted some things like this and organized it in Seattle? Would it have to be directed at the organizer, or could it be directed at individual citizens who participated in the blockade?
Oh, absolutely at the individual citizens. But, you know, there are hundreds of those. Maybe only a few dozen would be identifiable. Whatever, you know, we would do discovery on police records. We would do discovery on the organizations. We would find out as many people as we could, and we would sue 100 other John Does. But most of these people are going to be judgment proof. I mean, Susan Sarandon blocking the Holland Tunnel, she's not judgment proof, and she could be potentially liable for quite a bit. But the typical left-wing activist who has time to stick their arms in a PVC tube, they're probably judgment proof, or, you know, it's going to be harder to get money from than the what you could get out of them.
But judgment proof, that's just a really legal way of saying they live in their parents' basement, or?
More or less, okay. Right? But you know, we can get injunctions, and once it's an injunction and there's a court order, don't do this anymore, then when they do it again, it's not just, well, do the police feel like arresting them? It's, you've committed criminal contempt, and you can get federal marshals after them, maybe. But the organizations, I think, are the more important linchpins of this. This is happening through, on a nationwide basis, through organizations that are intentionally trying to injure thousands of citizens in the name of promoting the terrorist groups.
So if it were organizational, because I agree with you, right, not only from a monetary perspective, but also if you want to dismantle and stop some of these tactics from happening, going after the groups that are trying to organize and support these activities would be more effective. But I guess, what would the burden of proof be there? What kind of material support would they have had to provide? Is it just organizational? Would they have had to fund it, et cetera?
Well, it's a conspiracy. When you're in a conspiracy, you're liable for everything that the conspiracy does. And there's potential aiding and abetting liability. And, you know, surely they will say, oh, we just asked them to show up at Starbucks, and it's a coincidence that they spontaneously went to the highway and that we had the PVC tubes ready to go. At which point you subpoena the emails, you subpoena the text messages, and you subpoena the Facebook DMs. Maybe have to get it from Facebook and from Verizon, but you get this information and you dig in and you find out to what extent the organizations were involved, and you let a jury decide.
Yeah, good news is a lot of them just brag about it. They put together the flyers, they tweet about it, they put out videos of themselves there, so that might make it a little bit easier. Have you?
Yeah, they're very proud of themselves.
They are very proud of themselves. Have you had any takers, any citizens who said, yeah, I was harmed in this and I want to sue?
We've had lots of people happy to tell us, I've been harmed, tell me when you win something. But, you know, we need somebody to be the public face of the lawsuit, not just the public face, but actually the lead plaintiff directing the lawsuit. I can't come in as an officious intermeddler and say I'm suing on behalf of these people. I have to be representing somebody who was actually injured and is willing to have their name on the lawsuit, at which point, you know, I can understand why somebody would not want to be. Sometimes their employer doesn't want to be targeted. Sometimes they don't want to be targeted. They're afraid of these very violent left-wing groups, and that's reasonable fear. And you know, there's only so much the courts can do about that. But without somebody courageous like that willing to come forward, this is just unfortunately speculative talk.
Yeah, I mean, we had a viewer who was in the backup on I-5, had a medical emergency and couldn't get out of the backup. Certainly that's someone who would qualify to come to you, correct?
They would qualify, but it doesn't have to be that. It could just be in the backup. You were stuck in traffic an extra half hour. And for many people, it was more than a half hour. But, you know, if there was some sort of material inconvenience to you because of an illegal activity, that's enough.
Yeah. Let's end with this, because this has been a frustration for a long time. You know, I've been covering the same far left activists in Seattle for 13 years of my career here. And their tactics have changed over the years, but this in some form is a very similar one. And police have been hands off with them for a very long time. Do you think it would have a chilling effect if one of these lawsuits were able to be successful, or would they just change their tactics and plan things differently?
I mean, you know, there's a whack-a-mole game going on. They would certainly have to adjust. It would certainly be harder to organize these things. Somebody is buying the PVC. Somebody has that on their credit cards. We can find out. And, you know, at the margin, at least, there's some deterrence. If you're an organization that wants to be effective, you probably have money in the bank, and you can either have money in the bank or you can organize these illegal protests and get sued. And it's better to have an ineffective, broke organization organizing them than a well-funded one.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a great idea. Because I don't know, I feel like reasonable people are kind of out of options. The government won't do anything. The police are hogtied by the government, by politicians. And so maybe private citizens just have to start taking it into their own hands from a legal perspective. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll let you know if we have anyone who wants to take you up on this.
That'd be great. Thanks a lot.
Someone do it. Someone be brave. Be courageous. And I understand the concern, though, that he points out, that if you're going to put your name on a lawsuit against all these criminal activists who have done a lot of bad things, some of them, throughout the years in Seattle, who clearly don't care about the law, I can see how that might be terrifying if you're like, I don't want them coming after me personally, physically, whatever it is. Someone's got to be brave, though. So that's Ted Frank, Director of Litigation, Senior Attorney at Hamilton Lincoln Law Institute. I look forward to seeing if anybody takes him up on that, because I think it would really change the game in Seattle. Although I learned a new phrase, judgment proof. Mm-hmm. And it means that you don't have any money, even if they sue you. And I agree with his assertion that a lot of those activists would probably be judgment proof. All right, coming up next, Bob Ferguson dodges questions on the takeover of Interstate 5. I will play for you what he told Como News, and it was a bunch of word soup, but I want you to hear it anyway. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is encouraging people in 2024, especially if you're nearing retirement, to be very, very cautious of what politicians say and how much weight you give to it in an important election year. You know, Biden's going to be out there saying the economy is strong and everything's great, and if you follow his lead, well, that could set you up for a lot of risk when it comes to your retirement portfolio.
It's a tricky game, but we want to keep at least one foot on the wagon until we reach that part. But we're looking for that bump in the road going, all right, guys, get ready to jump, get ready to jump. And people are like, oh, you're trying to time the market. Sort of, because when inflation becomes the issue and the government is willing to print ad infinitum, the minute they crank that printing press up again, they're going to push everything back up, right? So they're kind of making you time the market in a way. So we're not trying to do that. That's one of the reasons we have a good amount of a ton of money in short-term bonds piled up right now. The stocks we do own are very rock solid dividend type paying stocks. And I just think it's time to really collect some good income here and see the way things play out, because this is just not a market that is offering a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. So if you're getting close to retirement, or man, you're working hard right now and you want to make sure that you don't take big losses this year in an election year, managing your risk is really important. So check out Zach's weekly radio show, knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. He talks about all of this stuff. You can also learn about Bulwark Capital Management's risk management strategy and how they're protecting retirement portfolios against loss as we speak. Okay, two Bob Ferguson related stories to get to. Oh my gosh. Como News tracked down Bob Ferguson at a press conference to ask him about, because he's been silent on it so far, right, about the blockade of I-5. They also talked to Dave Reichert, who we had on the show as well this week, to respond to what he would have done as governor. And maybe you will believe, but I guess it never ceases to amaze me just how squirrely Bob Ferguson can be.
Gubernatorial candidate Dave Reichert says the protesters stomped on the rights of people trying to use I-5.
There needs to be a strong message sent that this kind of behavior will not be tolerated.
Reichert's challenger, Bob Ferguson, who's the attorney general, deferred comment, saying it's a state patrol issue.
That's our client. We serve them. We give legal advice to them. We work with them. But they're the client who handles those things.
Right.
We have to be mindful of our role, right? We're their attorney. So they're the ones who make decisions on how to handle things. Our job is to give them legal advice.
Blah, 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 blah. And also, by that logic, right, then he can't talk about publicly anything any of the state agencies do at all. Any entity that his office represents, any public agency, any public employee that his office would theoretically represent, because remember, to the best of our knowledge, there's no lawsuit right now against this incident, so there's really nothing that precludes him from talking about it, then he can't, how can he even run for governor then? If you can't talk about any of that stuff because you're the attorney, then I guess you better just pack up your gubernatorial campaign. Now, for people who would say, well, this was an official government press conference and you can't mix business and pleasure, which is true. So he couldn't proactively at this press conference talk about what he would do as a candidate for governor, because you do have to separate the two things. That's very important. That being said, there's nothing that stops him as the attorney general from condemning criminal acts, from saying more broadly without speaking to what his client, the Washington State Patrol, did or did not do. There's nothing that would have stopped him from telling Jeremy Harris with Como News, you know, this is wrong. People shouldn't be doing this to other citizens, and XYZ, it's against the law. But he's not willing to do that. I mean, he doesn't say anything over the weekend. Maybe give him the benefit of the doubt because he's traveling, or I don't know if he went to the game in Houston or whatever it is. But when given an opportunity to speak out about it, that's the word soup that you come up with. And I put out this little video. I said, comparing Dave Reichert and Bob Ferguson, and asked people, yeah, I wonder who would make the better governor.
This kind of behavior will not be tolerated.
Bob Ferguson, who's the attorney general, deferred comment, saying it's a state patrol issue.
That's our client. We serve them. We give legal advice to them. We work with them. But they're the client who handles those things.
Right.
We have to be mindful of our role.
Your expectation would have been that after the warnings were given, the Washington State Patrol effected arrests.
Yep.
We're their attorney. So they're the ones who make decisions on how to handle things. Our job is to give them legal advice.
We would have made arrests on the freeway and opened up the freeway for those people.
Yeah, I can tell you who I think would make the better governor. Speaking of Attorney General Ferguson, the chicken checks. We have a new twist in the saga of the chicken checks. If for some reason you're brand new to the show, a little bit of context here. Bob Ferguson's office sued in an antitrust lawsuit some chicken and tuna manufacturers for price fixing. And we got like $48 million. Fine. All of that's fine. That's his job. Great. But he decided, rather than come up with a simple way to push that money out to people who actually bought chicken and tuna or to give it to food banks, he decided to send out checks using some database that Experian gave the state, $50, $120 checks that went out to what were supposed to be low-income Washingtonians, except I've heard from rich people who got them, people who were admittedly like, I'm very wealthy. I was not entitled to one of these checks. They've also been going out to an awful lot of deceased people, and not people who died just a couple years ago. In one instance, it went out to someone who's been dead since 1986. In another instance, a family member contends that their family member who got one died in 1966. So the whole thing is a boondoggle. So Democratic State Senator Mark Mullett, who is running against Bob Ferguson for governor, so I'll give it that. However, he's always been kind of common sense on these things. Well, he has just introduced a bill that would prevent the chicken check debacle from ever happening again. So his bill number, Senate Bill 6078, he's co-sponsoring it with a Republican state senator, Linda Wilson. And it says, state agency may not expend monies except pursuant to an appropriation by law if the monies are received in an administrative or judicial, regulatory, or civil enforcement action or settlement thereof brought by the state. So I messaged Senator Mullet this morning. I said, can you just put that in layman's terms for me? So he says he would have, under the, if this law passes, and this is the law that Bob Ferguson had to abide by when handing out that $48 million, he would have needed legislative approval before mailing out these checks that had his name on them. He could, if there's any sort of settlement, he doesn't need legislative approval if he's giving money back to affected persons, so people who actually bought chicken and bought tuna. So if you're returning money, the ill-gotten gains to the people it was taken from, you wouldn't need legislative approval for that. If he wanted to give the money to food banks, he wouldn't need legislative approval for that. But if he wanted to do what he did and take some weird roundabout way to send checks to people who may or may not have been impacted by it using a database that the legislature never approved, he would have to go to the legislature to be able to do that. Obviously, even if it passes this year, highly unlikely that this particular bill will apply to Bob Ferguson since he's running for governor, and even if he loses, he's not going to be the attorney general anymore. But I give a little round of applause to Senator Mullet for being willing to hold a member of his own party accountable, even if that member of his own party is running against him for governor. All right, coming up next, you guys need to steel yourselves for this because I was sitting here watching this. Nicole's like, why are you making such funny faces? I'm like, this is unreal. So a class of local fourth graders were warned that a member of the staff was going to go from identifying as a woman to a man, and they were given a lesson using a book that I'm going to talk about with you to learn how to help respect different gender identities. You will not believe the unbelievable book that was deemed age-appropriate for these local fourth graders. So that's next in our segment, Unbelievable. First, I've been urging you to take the First Mark Challenge. I know a lot of you have taken me up on that, but I'm telling you, I wish I had done it years ago because it makes the insurance process way more streamlined to have a local company that's been in the business for a long time handling all of your insurance needs. Need a claim? Call First Mark. Need to save a little money on your insurance? You don't like the insurance you have? You just call First Mark. Mike and I took the First Mark Challenge in the spring. Now First Mark handles all of our insurance needs. And now is a good time as well to have an insurance broker if you haven't had one and you've just been dealing with it on your own. Because with the crime rates that are happening, sometimes with insurance companies in this climate, you file one claim because of a crime and they might drop you like a hot potato.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss. So like a windshield loss.
Sure.
Right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right? For a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already. But it's just I'm just saying there's never been a better time to be a broker because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, so having First Mark in your corner, I'll tell you, it makes all the difference. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Set aside some time to do the First Mark Challenge. You can do it virtually. FirstMarkInsurance.com, they work for you. All right, a class of local fourth graders was given a lesson in gender identity because one of their staff members over the holiday break decided that they were going to transition from identifying as a woman to identifying as a man, and these fourth graders are expected to change the way that they refer to the staff member. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. I can't muster a boop because this is that upsetting. So I cannot do a boop today. This happened at Mar Vista Elementary in Normandy Park. It's the Highline School District. So to set this up, it is January 7th at 4 p.m., and parents are just getting ready to send their kids back to school from the holiday break. They get an email from Maggie Heater, who's the principal of Mar Vista Elementary, and it's the principal informing them, again, 4 p.m., the day before they're sending their kids back, that the next day is going to be an interesting day in their kids' fourth grade classroom. I'm going to read the full email to you. The subject line, equity lesson to support a staff member in Ms. Snyder's classroom. Dear families of Ms. Snyder's fourth grade classroom, there are many staff members that work throughout the day with your student, including in the classroom, on the playground, or in the cafeteria. One adult who the students know as Ms. Angela wanted to share that they have begun the process of transitioning from Ms. Angela to Mr. Angel and will be utilizing he, him pronouns. When we all return from break, students and staff will be asked to call him Mr. Angel. Upon our return, there will be a time in the day when Ms. Snyder and Mr. Walker will co-teach a lesson about his transition in accordance with the board policy in Highline Public Schools. They will be using the children's book titled It Feels Good to Be Yourself, a book about gender identity by Teresa Thorne. This lesson will be age-appropriate and focus on Angel's wish to be called a new pronoun and a new name. I am sharing this with you so that you will be aware and have the opportunity to discuss this with your child before we come back to school if you wish. Email me or call me with any concerns. So there's a couple issues here. You're not giving them time to decide how to discuss this with their child. We're talking about a fourth grader who the next day is going to come back to school and someone they knew as Miss Angela is going to be Mr. Angel. You're telling them at 4 p.m., acting like you're doing them a favor by giving them time to discuss this, which it's not optional. Your child will refer to this Miss Angela as Mr. Angel. Your child will be expected to do that. God forbid if your child doesn't. And now you as a parent have just hours before your kid goes to bed, if you even saw the email, to talk to them about the complex issue of gender identity and gender ideology. That's ridiculous. And we talk about transparency in schools. You might think that's transparency by sending an email at 4 p.m. the day before this is going to happen. That's not transparency, and that's not fair to parents. But sure enough, this happened the next day. The lesson was taught, and kids in this fourth grade class were told about Miss Angela versus Mr. Angel. And now they mentioned the book, It Feels Good to Be Yourself, a book about gender identity, which was going to be used to illustrate and teach fourth graders this important lesson. And remember, the principal said the lesson will be age appropriate. Well, I want you to judge whether this book is age appropriate. So there's a video. We have no indication this video was used in class, but there's just a video on YouTube of some person reading this book out loud. So we thought that would be a good way to share with you what this book entails.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nana Cece. Welcome to my story time. Today we're going to read It Feels Good to Be Yourself. I hope you enjoy it.
Something tells me I'm not going to enjoy it. And Nana Cece is not the teacher in question or the staffer in question that's transitioning. It's a person who read stuff like this on the internet. All right, Nana Cece, keep reading the book for us.
This is Ruthie's friend, Alex. Alex is both a boy and a girl. When Alex was born, everyone thought Alex was a girl. But Alex is both boy and girl. This is Alex's gender identity.
So we're going to teach fourth graders that someone can be a boy and a girl. All right, one more passage.
When you were born, you couldn't tell people who you were or how you felt. They looked at you and made a guess. Maybe they got it right. Maybe they got it wrong. What a baby's body looks like when they're born can be a clue to what the baby's gender will be, but not always. When people guess wrong, it's okay to let them know. Ruthie was 5 when she told her parents. I know you think I'm a boy, but really, I feel like a girl. Oops! Ruthie was a girl all along.
That's unhinged. That's not right. Oh, somebody looked at you, a doctor, and they made a guess about what your gender was when you were born? So in this lesson to to try to help these fourth graders navigate the fact that Miss Angela is now Mr. Angel, you're then going to indoctrinate them into believing that the gender they were at birth was a guess. And that when they're as young as 5 years old, if they feel like a different gender, they should just come out, let their parents know, and the parents will be like, okay, cool. How old are fifth graders or fourth graders?
What? Fourth graders, probably.
7, 8?
Yeah, maybe a little older. Maybe 9, 10.
So I try to tread lightly on, how do I put this? I don't want to be demonetized on YouTube. And as much as I hate saying that, YouTube is super picky when it comes to this particular issue of gender identity and kids. And I try to never have it come across as a personal insult. I'm not attacking any individual person. But this book is not age appropriate. Using that book after giving parents a couple hours notice is not appropriate. And expecting that fourth graders with just a few hours notice are going to comply or must comply and be completely fine with, and parents have to be completely fine with them having to change entirely how they refer to a staff member that was Miss Angela before break and Mr. Angel after break, is completely inappropriate. It's indoctrination. It is so far above and beyond the role that schools should have in a kid's life. If my child was in that fourth grade classroom, they would not be attending that school district today. They would be out of school like that. How absolutely, Nicole, can you play that third clip again? And again, this video wasn't shown in class, but it's this book that this person in this video is reading from that was used to teach this lesson.
When you were born, you couldn't tell people who you were or how you felt. They looked at you and made a guess. Maybe they got it right. Maybe they got it wrong. What a baby's body looks like when they're born can be a clue to what the baby's gender will be, but not always. When people guess wrong, it's okay to let them know. Ruthie was 5 when she told her parents. I know you think I'm a boy, but really, I feel like a girl. Oops! Ruthie was a girl all along.
Gender is not oops! It's not an accident. It's not something that's up for debate. Sure, if this adult teacher, and this is where I struggle with this, I don't care what adults do. I really do not care what adults do with their lives. You want to be Mr. Angel? Fine. But you cannot expect fourth grade kids to have to go along with it, especially if their parents aren't comfortable with it. And what's going to happen to kids, fourth graders, who inevitably forget or mess up or slip up and call Mr. Angel, Miss Angela, like they're used to? Are they going to get in trouble for it? Are they going to get an email home to parents? My child would be out of that freaking school so fast. And I know that there are a lot of parents who are upset by this, because we've been getting emails. I know our friend Jonathan Cho had done something on this. The Burien local paper was doing something on it. So it's getting attention. But this is, you look at that lesson versus what the situation was. Even if they wanted to tell students, you have to refer to this woman as Mr. Angel. I do think that's bad in and of itself, because you're asking fourth graders to comply and their parents to just be okay with it, even though scientifically it doesn't make a lot of sense, or biologically. But then you're going to segue that into an indoctrination lesson, where you then tell these fourth graders that this is okay because at the gender they were assigned at birth was a guess, was assigned. I hate that phrase. It was assigned at birth. No, that was just how they were born. So then you've indoctrinated them on the larger issue, and it's about more than just Miss Angela versus Mr. Angel. Wild. Again, Mira Vista Elementary, Normandy Park in the Highline School District. If it bothers you, speak out about it, especially if you have a child in that district, even if they are not in this particular fourth grade class. This stuff has to change. The only way it's going to change is if parents make their voice heard. Pushback, vilification, labels be damned. Unfreaking believable. Coming up next, we'll dip outside of Washington State. Some kids in New York are being forced to give up their high school and start learning remotely because the high school has been taken over by migrants from the southern border. We'll discuss. First, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. And I'm so glad I did all this for myself before the first of the year so I don't feel the stress and the strain of a New Year's weight loss resolution. I've done like 34 of those. Not 34, because then I would have had a weight loss resolution when I was like two. Done a lot of those in my life. They've never worked out. But here I am, 37 pounds down on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, feeling so good about myself. I worked out this morning. And that's something that when I had put on weight during the pandemic, I just had no energy to do it. So not only is it compounded, like you've gained weight, but then you don't have the energy to do the things that you need to do to stay healthy. So the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program has been great for me. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, no drugs or injections. They just teach you what to eat in the right portions and how to maintain the weight loss for life. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. It's free. There's no risk to call and just chat with them about whether the program's right for you, because not every weight loss program is right for every person. Okay, kids in New York have been forced into remote learning as migrants are moved into their school. 2,000 migrants have been bused in and are now staying at their school, and they're forced to learn remotely again. I mean, I guess after the pandemic, you made remote learning easy. You did it for the pandemic. Let's do it so these migrants have a place to stay. This is the headline from Fox News. New York City high school students forced into remote learning as 2,000 migrants sheltered in the school instead. And this doesn't sound like it's going to be a permanent situation, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's an hour, if it's a day. Here's some video of the migrants that are arriving at the school. And as some people pointed out, they're bypassing the metal detectors. Usually students at this school, actual students at the school, when they come in, they have to go through a metal detector. Not the migrants. Come on in. Come one, come all. And shutting down this high school, impacting the learning of children whose parents are paying taxes for them to go to school in that building. And now 2,000 migrants are going to be sheltered there because the situation has gotten so severe, there's nowhere for them to go. But I've got news for you. New York City, the mayor, the governor of New York, until you stop accommodating them, they're going to keep coming. And look, I get it. It is in some instances, a humanitarian issue. I feel very bad for the children who are brought here by their parents or by a family member. I feel horrible for them. I don't want them sleeping on the streets of New York City. But that's why we have to take a harder stance at the southern border and say, you can't come in. We have no place for you to go. We're not going to displace public school students so you have a place to sleep for the night. It's wrong. It makes no sense. Again, you know, Mayor Eric Adams, the new mayor of Chicago, which I forget his name. Nicole, can you remind me what the mayor of Chicago's name is? They're speaking out about the general issue and their resources being absolutely stretched to the breaking point. But you know what they're not saying? They're not saying stop coming. They haven't been pushing out forcefully enough against the Biden administration to say, we have to increase border security. We have to turn these people around if they don't have a legitimate asylum claim, because economic asylum is not an asylum claim. Neither is fleeing from just general crime issues. We have general crime issues in the United States. It has to be more severe than that. There needs to be a ground stop at the southern border. I don't know what else you do at this point. Taking over schools, how much, what is his name?
Brandon Johnson.
That's right. Brandon Johnson.
Yeah.
And he's uber progressive. But again, they just want more money from the feds. Like, hey, if we got to take all these migrants, give us more money. What you need to say is we're not taking the migrants. We're not taking them. If you bus them here, they're going to be sleeping under a bridge because we're not putting them in a school. I don't know at what point reasonable people on the left are willing to say enough is enough. That we are a compassionate country, we are a country of immigrants, we believe that diversity is a strength, but we cannot allow unfettered access across our southern border in such great numbers that it hurts taxpaying Americans. Like, asylum claims, legitimate, fine, that's what this country is for. We have a process in place for that, but that process has been completely abandoned. You have people who come in who claim some flimsy asylum status, and then they're given a court date for 2027. you're never going to see those people in court. You're never going to see them again. This has to stop. And hopefully this is a wake-up call for parents, at least in New York. Wait till it happens here, though. It's not going to take long. All right, speaking of sports stories, two sports stories on the show today? What am I? Our friend Jessamine's going to be so proud of me. I'm going to try to do her justice. California wants to ban tackle football for kids under the age of 12. I have some strong feelings about this. I'm very curious how you guys feel. We'll read some comments coming up. The Associated Press headline, California lawmakers to consider a ban on tackle football for kids under 12. A move pushed by advocates seeking to protect kids from brain damage, but opposed by coaches who warn it would cut off youth from an important source of physical activity. I, as you know, and I've talked on the show, I have many concussions. I've had 6 concussions in my life. I suffer with the... Actually, that's one example. Searching for words is one of my issues from it. I suffer with the consequences of those concussions. Only one of them is sports related. Most of them are related to growing up poor and making fun for yourself, like Frisbee on the roof. Sounds fun, till it isn't. So I understand the desire to say, okay, a 12-year-old, you know, are they really gearing up for the NFL or whatever it is? And can't you make it flag football? So I do get it. I do. And that's where I struggle because of my personal experience with like brain trauma and what it does to people later in life. I mean, it can create a truly miserable life for an adult, as we see with a lot of former NFL players. But I also think that parents ought to get to decide if they want their kid to play. And also, I don't know that 12-year-olds are hitting each other particularly hard.
To be technical, so this is for under 12. So 12 years old and higher can play tackle football. It's for under 12. Under 12, you're barely tackling. So what this is doing is just trying to discourage, I suppose, from that sport or whatever. But it's just being a parent. I mean, they're just trying to parent your children because they just want to take something away and say you can't do it anymore. When I don't think a lot – I could be wrong, but I don't think a lot of 8-year-olds are getting these concussions. It's just that they want to discourage it because – then maybe later on you'll choose not to tackle, right? After 12. Then by that time,
well, then you won't want to play football.
12 to 15 year old, you don't want to be tackled.
I just don't, I really struggle with this. I'm curious what you guys think because I don't like government overreach. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this is a particularly impactful piece of legislation because I don't think 11-year-olds are hitting each other very hard. So it might be just to discourage them from the sport and go into a sport that has less contact.
Right.
But I also want parents to make these decisions, just like I want parents to be able to make the decision about what kind of health care their kids get and not, like in Washington State, have a mature minor doctrine, which allows the government to basically indoctrinate kids into getting all sorts of care without the consent of their parents. So I want to be consistent on that issue for sure. So I'm curious what you guys think about this. I actually don't have much of a problem with it.
Well, that would be your parenting. If you were a parent, you would say, "Hey, I don't want you to tackle that young because, like, let's protect you from whatever." And you know the child, so I think that's the thing: is it depends on the kid, right? So some kids can handle it, some kids can't, and that's why there's an alternative such as flag football. But I think that some kids can handle it, and that might be their career. That might not be their career, but I don't know. Yeah. I think team sports in any form is typically a positive, and
I agree.
I think this is up to the parents, and I just don't think government has a right.
The bigger debate is when they're older, and honestly, this leads to a debate about do you allow tackle football at all in high school, and that's probably the next debate. And I'm sure, and I believe there's been debates around that, certainly. But you create rules. I mean, in the NFL, they have much stronger rules about hitting the head, and about contact with the face mask, etc. And so you can, and the NFL has. I mean. Back in the day, they used to have these little leather helmets, right? That barely, they didn't do anything. And so you can improve the sport. We have a lot of science in the athletic field that is geared toward trying to make these sports safer. But you're right. I mean, parents should be able to say, is my child really small? Like, are they going to get hurt by this? Do I want them to play, et cetera? Knowing the risks. You enter it knowing the risk as a parent.
Everybody knows the risk. And I just think that I'm going to stay consistent on this. They don't get to decide. They can have a sex change, drugs, or run away from home and not tell the parents. I'm going to stay consistent and say they don't get to parent your child.
Yeah. So. Well, because you're talking about something that could have a lifelong impact on your kid. If they get let's just say there's a real hard hitter on the 11th grade or the 11-year-old team. And if your child gets, as I know personally, multiple concussions when they're young, that's going to impact them for the rest of their life, as is gender, you know, blocking puberty blockers or whatever it is. But schools and, you know, Washington Democrats, they seem perfectly fine with those lifelong changes to a child. But, oh, possibility that you might have an 11-year-old who gets hit too hard in football.
The other argument could be that the younger that you learn the right way to tackle, the less you are likely to get injured as much in the future. So
teach them how to tackle correctly, put some rules and some guardrails in place. And like in the NFL, there's punishments if you don't follow those things. Yep. Okay, one more quick national story. I know we're going over today. X has launched three new shows. So, of course, Tucker Carlson was the first big personality to bring his show exclusively to X after he left Fox News. And I remember at the time, Don Lemon had got fired from CNN, and Elon Musk said, "Hey, Don Lemon, come over to X. Like, we're here for all voices," which I kind of appreciated because, you know, Elon's got this right-wing propaganda machine, according to the media. But if you allow varying voices and give them just as much of a platform, I think it really undercuts that criticism of Elon Musk. So, welcome to X, Don Lemon, Tulsi Gabbard, and Jim Rome. So X announced that they're going to be exclusively platforming three shows, a show from Don Lemon, used to be with CNN, former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, and sports broadcast personality Jim Rome, which I think is an interesting diversity of opinions when you add that to Tucker Carlson's show. So Don Lemon said, this is interesting because this statement doesn't read a lot like the Don Lemon we know and maybe don't love so much from CNN. He says, I've heard you, and today I am back bigger, bolder, freer. My new media company's first project is the Don Lemon Show. It will be available to everyone easily, whenever and wherever you want, streaming on the platforms where the conversations are happening. And you'll find it first on X, the biggest space for free speech in the world. Oh, interesting. I now know more than ever, and we need a place for honest debate and discussion without the hall monitors. This is just the beginning, so stay tuned. Now, I would probably not watch Don Lemon's show very much. I might sample it, but I will say from experience, you know, who he was on CNN, I don't believe is who he always was. You know, there's old clips of him that surface on CNN talking about crime and stuff in a way that seemed much more rational and reasonable. And I know what it's like to censor yourself a little bit or to feel censored in one of those mainstream news environments. So we'll see. Who is the real Don Lemon? Will the real Don Lemon please stand up? Maybe he'll stand up on X. Tulsi Gabbard.
Another Eminem reference. It's like two in a week.
I like Eminem, okay? I am a child of the early 2000s.
You're so basic.
Don't just call me basic? That's rude. Who'd you listen to in high school?
No, Eminem. But that's what I'm saying. There's a song that calls us basic for listening to Eminem.
Okay.
We'll go.
All right, Tulsi Gabbard talked about the new show posting a video on X.
We must defend our right to free speech by using it. I'm excited to announce today a partnership with X, a platform that under the leadership of Elon Musk not only defends free speech, it is celebrated and encouraged.
I like Tulsi, but her cadence and her speaking is so interesting. Sometimes it's soothing, but when it's talking about something, you know, sometimes she does her whole aloha thing, and I'm like, that's soothing. I could fall asleep to that. But it's very odd, sort of very stilted kind of. It's creepy a little bit. But anyway, that's probably one that I would check out and see. I asked you guys in our daily poll for subscribers on Patreon and Locals. I said X, formerly known as Twitter, has announced these three new shows on its platform. How likely are you to watch one or all of these shows? Very likely, somewhat likely, or not likely. I'll be honest. I'm surprised how many of you said you don't plan to watch any of them. Vast majority of you said not likely. Which only surprises me because here you are consuming a digital show, an alternative to the mainstream media. And so I thought for sure that you'd want to consume others. A lot of people said Tulsi, but certainly not Don Lemon. Lots of kids says Don Lemon is a definite no. Weiss Castle on Locals says, these are like the new fall shows on TV. Initial rating will be high because of curiosity, but only the really good ones will survive. Annette says, might watch Tulsi out of curiosity and there's nothing else, and if there's nothing else to catch up on. KICJJ2 says, no way on Don Lemon, maybe Tulsi Gabbard, and I don't listen to sports. Yeah, I'm not a big sports person either, but I think it's nice that it's like not just news and politics, but also sports. And it really has me wondering where this whole, where is this going to go? You know, it used to be that this stuff was very, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, rare, but there's a different word I'm looking for. Those concussions are really kicking in. I wish I hadn't played tackle football when I was 11 years old. No, I'll think of it. It's a good word for this. Like, they're very unique. They used to be very unique.
Okay.
And now not so much anymore. I mean, ours is obviously very unique. I mean, we're very special. But as the market sort of flooded with personalities who had a good enough brand that they could go out and do something on their own, how does that translate for everyday Americans? I've always believed that there's going to be a snapback. And that's kind of the point. And that's the point of one of the points in me doing this is I believe there is a place for mainstream news and for major networks that reach hundreds of millions of people. But they need to crumble and be built back up. And I think that some of these things, like what Tucker Carlson is doing at the national level, you know, X and what it's doing with these shows, certainly what we're doing here at a statewide level, the goal is for them to be successful enough and profitable enough that they take away from the mainstream legacy outlets in a way where they cannot help but have to rebuild and reassess what they're doing and why their viewers fled from them like the plague. And so I can see that happening where the novel, they used to be novel. Is that the word I'm looking for? Yeah.
That will work.
Where the, you know, you got the concussion, but eventually I'll come up with the word.
Come on.
Where eventually there's so many of them and not everybody can, you can't afford to pay $5, $5, $5, $5 for every single independent outlet. Although I do appreciate you paying $5 for the show, obviously. I hope you keep doing it, right? But eventually that it's so saturated that you're like, oh my gosh, I can't do that anymore. And then there's so many options that hopefully there can be a rebuilding of what the Fourth Estate is really supposed to be about. Okay, we'll get to questions and comments coming up next, and then a very funny sanity check. I really enjoy it, actually.
Yep.
Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com joined us. He came into studio the other day and talked to us about his predictions for the 2024 housing market, particularly since the market's been a little bit, ooh, and now we've got a presidential election year where, as we said, Biden's going to make you believe that things are A-okay.
Well, my expectation is that rates are going to come down. The Fed is telling us they are going to. It is an election year. I would have expected that to happen, even if the Fed wasn't talking about it. And if it wasn't interest rates, it'd be something else. It'd be tax credits, first-time tax credits, something, you know, something else, some other type of incentive to spark housing because, you know, come November, they're going to want people feeling good about the economy. And, you know, I listened to, you know, Zach Abraham, you know, one of your other guys, really smart dude. And, you know, he has concerns about the economy, you know, that are not going to be controllable. But what can you control? You can control housing to a certain degree. And if they can put pressure down on interest rates, allow more transactions to happen, it's going to make people feel better.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, once you lock in at those interest rates, you're locked in, obviously, unless you, you know, refinance later on. So I think for people who are looking to sell their home or buy a home, I think that that could be good this year. And then it's the question of in the long term, okay, if you've got the Fed artificially bringing down interest rates when the country is just not ready for it, what are the long term implications of that? But check out Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. One of the very first things he does for you when you reach out to him and want to put your home on the market is he gives you a free market analysis. And so these are really good questions to talk to him about the Fed, about the reduction of interest rates and what it means for you and the price you're going to get for your home. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, questions and comments from the live stream. Bill Biz is back with a $20 super chat. Inslee's final state of the state. Hallelujah. I agree, although I hope the next state of the state is, it is his final, right? Did I mislead people?
Yeah, because it started, the new one would start in January, so it would take over that state of the state. I believe
yeah,
so.
Yeah, but are you sworn in late January? Oh my gosh, I hope I didn't just mislead people.
Well, he starts it off by saying, like, this is his final year, so.
Okay, if I misled you, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure, because he talks about not fading into the dark.
You know how disappointed people are going to be if on January 10th of next year he gives his final State of the State speech and then they swear in a new governor? Oh gosh, all right, don't come knocking on my, that just hit me, the realization. Okay, anyway, David, somebody will tell me in the comments if I'm right or wrong. David Heldstab says, what a joke. Inslee has consistently made it tough on police by his own policies and soft on crime for criminals and now touting how things need to change. I agree, but a lot of voters have a very short memory span. And so they're going to look at what Bob Ferguson's out talking, pro-law enforcement, all of this, and they're not going to remember that he hasn't said jack when law enforcement needed it the most. Mugshot Espresso says encampment's cleared. What does he do when he goes through Olympia? Puts his head down? Probably. He's in the back of his black SUV. There have been some encampments cleared along the highway heading to Olympia because I've seen them there, and then they weren't there and there were boulders in their place, which is one of the things they're doing. But certainly there are an awful lot more to be cleared, including in the city of Olympia proper. Sharon Barber, for Pete's sake, darn tootin' hogwash. Jay Inslee. Yeah, he...
I am going to miss that language.
He is one for his J-isms, his dad jokes.
It's the only time I can smile during his little speeches.
Or if you're a 40-year-old Trump supporter and you haven't got the vaccine, you're a threat to every kid in your community. So sometimes his J-isms are a little more dark and mean.
Yeah, couldn't run a two-car funeral.
He couldn't run a two-car funeral. Kenneth Roch, Brandy, the neighborhoods that had... specifically talking about are in the direct flight path of SeaTac at other airports, where airlines dump raw fuel before landing. Well,
could be, but I still don't understand where you come up with a 2.5 years off their lives.
Right. Especially when, I mean, if you had like the same population for however many years and then a whole brand new population moved in, I don't understand how you can realistically make that estimate. Matt Gilbert says, Chicago has some of the toughest gun laws in the country, and it's a utopia. Yeah. Not on Ferguson. Charlie Knowlton says, in Ferguson's defense, deceased people have zero income, so that would put them below the poverty line. Very true.
It's true.
On the teacher crazy book situation, Janelle Villegas says, hashtag homeschooling. H says, way to confuse kids, teach math, English, and science. Spencer Cole says, meanwhile, other countries focus on teaching their children STEM. Not us. This is out of control. The wheels have come off. UW football fans, so you're okay with them being a man when they're a woman and being Mr. instead of Miss then. So you're okay with them being a man. Is he referring to my opinion?
I'm not sure, but I'm thinking that, to be clear, as far as the YouTube, because you were saying you were worried about YouTube and stuff like that, but we're okay. Live how you want to live. It's just that this was the wrong approach to telling kids what your name is.
Right. What I'm saying is I don't care what an adult does. I'm not going to criticize a private adult citizen. This is the libertarian in me. You do what you want to do and what makes you happy as long as it's not being forced upon us.
Right.
You can ask to be Mr. Angel. I'm not going to call you Mr. Angel. I'll probably just like say nothing.
Hey.
Hi. How are you?
Well, then I have to them. Do it in between school years.
Right.
New students that come in, these ones are already used to calling you one thing. Don't make them change in the middle. And
that's the thing. You do you, but don't expect anyone else or require that anyone else play along. That's my issue. But private citizens doing their own thing in a way that's not harming or forced upon other people, don't care. But this is being forced upon other people, and they're fourth grade kids. So that's the point I was trying to make. Joe Hutchison says, I am convinced the left is trying to completely destroy this country and have intentions of mass human extinction in this world. Everything they do goes against any common sense, morality, responsibility, or just a good human being. Not everything, but a lot of things. Certainly on the political scale. Letting migrants take over a kid's school so they work remotely, that doesn't make any sense. This book you're reading, teaching kids in fourth grade that, gender is just a guess. Doctors just guessing. Science, so now for their whole life, they're going to be like, that doctor I'm going to see that told me I have cancer, just a guess. Right. No, like it's not a guess, okay? It's biology. All right, just two on the football front, because I wanted to hear what you thought. On California looking to ban tackle football for kids under 12. H says, football changed my son's life. He was on the wrong path in life. His football coaches taught him how to respect and play by the rules. So as Nicole said, there's a give and a take, right? The small risk of your 11-year-old or younger getting some sort of life-altering head injury versus the other benefits that they might get from being on a team. David Dinn says, the key to a good tackle is proper fundamentals early. The basics are necessary to reduce the injury. Yeah, so don't lift with your legs. Just take the legs completely out of the equation. You just lift with your lower back.
Yes, that's straight one up. Of them.
Yes, no. All right, good questions and comments today. Nicole, thank you. Mm-hmm. In our closing sanity check, a moment of levity from Washington Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal.
We're going to talk about outrageous things that have happened or things that have never happened. Let's talk about the fact that President Trump incited an erection. And maybe that too.
Love it. Actually, I kind of love it. I thought it was very endearing and good to see her laugh for a change. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you can spare $5 a month, please, sir, to help support our show and our mission during a critical election year, we sure would appreciate it. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.